This is TWiT.
So the metaverse, best first chapter in the history of science fiction, in my opinion, Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash. Mm-hmm. Do you remember it? The pizza delivery gal, she's on a skateboard. It's really exciting.
What?
No, never mind.
Lost me at skateboard.
Anyway, Snow Crash.
Delivering in the car first and then the skateboard.
Then the car. And it's good, isn't it? You remember that, right, Kevin?
I remember that. I was excited.
It was really great.
1992, things were different.
Things were different. But one of the best features of Snow Crash, like all Neal Stephenson novels, ends with a whimper, not a bang. But starts with a bang. So, you know. It's actually, some of his more recent novels have much better endings. I really like Seven Eves. But anyway. That's different. You didn't like Seven Eves, the ending of Seven Eves, John? You wanted more. Well, that maybe he can write a second one. All right.
Jeremy is fired up back there.
Yeah. I thought that was a great novel. Anyway, the metaverse comes from that book, Snow Crash. It is, you know, and now with Ready Player One and plenty of other science fiction creations. Everybody's kind of aware of this notion of the Matrix jacking in to a world that is so realistic it becomes your life. It becomes your second life.
What was it Second Life? Wasn't that the game?
That was not the one. Yeah,
people in that wanted to be the metaverse. Yeah. Earlier.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
hey, you baby steps, right? Like, it was something, but when there was nothing.
I think a lot of innovation in tech and in science comes from the fact that we all read science fiction and we're just trying to invent that thing that we thought was so cool when we were 16.
Right.
Well, the thing in Metaverse about Earth, I definitely wrote that right straight into a product spec, and I know that the Google Earth and Google Maps guys did as well. That basically envisioned the idea of having a globe that you could turn around with your hand and look and zoom in and out and see everything.
So that's what Google Earth is, Earth from Snow Crash.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
See?
That's Thank cool. you.
Ed P. saying that in the chat room as well.
I was reading 3D Atlas at the time and we said, okay, we've done this thing with the CD-ROM board. Where do we go next? I said, we want to put a whole 3D globe and all this stuff.
That's so cool. And it is still cool.
The company got shut down, but...
Yeah, but let's not forget, I mean... Even though we've kind of gotten used to it, that is a very, very cool product.
Absolutely.
I still use it.
One of the best.
Because it's just so easy to use and it allows us to go somewhere that we'll probably never get to go.
And really go.
And really get into it. You know,
3D and everything.
Still feels futuristic.
But that's the other part of this is that also the thing that has happened is that and what's happened with mapping is that it has gone from a product to a commodity.
And
we have OpenStreetMap, we have APIs like Leaflet and things, so actually embedding maps in your website now is a line of code, and the assumption that you can embed a map that has the entire Earth on it and drop points on it and move things around has become, that's just...
It's commonplace. It's just how it is.
Table stakes.
Yep.
And part of, OpenStreetMap is a impressive achievement there in that it has managed to gather lots of the other companies apart from Google to collaborate and work on that. So a lot of the data from that, Microsoft and Apple are feeding into that as well and putting stuff back out again too. So
that's interesting. I didn't realize that. Because the original idea of OpenStreetMap was it would be kind of crowdsourced, right? It'd be like
And it still is. You can open up OpenStreetMap now and fix things. I've added, paths and things here. And to still do that. But in terms of And also, it's very flexible. Anyone can construct new map layers from it. So there's lots of different kinds of map layers that you can construct from it and get custom versions. You're not waiting for Apple or Google to update their product for it to look different. So that's a powerful thing. So part of the question for the sort of the metaverse stuff is how much of it will be a battle between the giants about who owns the tech and the specs for that, and how much of it will be stuff that gets pushed out into those kinds of layers. And that's... the nice thing about the Earth is that we have a sort of agreed coordinate system. I mean, okay, we have two or three, but basically there's a primary coordinate system that we all use, and you can cross-check that with a GPS, and you can cross-check that with other people's maps and see does this thing fit where it belongs. And part of the challenge of the metaverse stuff is saying what they've done so far has been like tabletop VR, where it's, okay, we're putting things in your room most of the time. And the idea of putting stuff in the world, which they're starting to do now, means you need that kind of shared model of the world that we have for mapping, but you needed a much higher resolution and you need to have buildings and things in it as well. And you hit the question of, if I'm putting on my goggles and scanning the neighborhood, if I'm doing that out of doors, fair enough, we can share that. If I'm doing that indoors, you probably don't want that to be uploaded to an OpenStreetMap-like thing or even a Facebook-like thing. You don't necessarily want them to have a model of the inside of your house, but that's what you're constructing. So the sort of the models around how we do that and what counts as public space gets a lot messier.
I forgot you have a lot of expertise and history in this area, actually. I completely forgot that.
Well, I'm talking about one of the things I did recently, well, fairly recently, the last couple of years, was I've been working for part of the UK government called Digital Catapult, and 2 years ago we wrote a thing called Who Will Own the Metaverse, which was trying to think through some of these pieces and draw the things together.
Interesting.
And the, you know, and the question is, those companies who are thinking about this, you know, Niantic's another one. They've basically built this. They've built the model of the world. Mm-hmm. They've got Ingress. An AR overlay for it.
Right.
They used Ingress, and then they've used that for Pokemon Go, and they're now building a platform that you can build your own games on top of that, and starting to think about how to sell that out. So they've done some of that mapping stuff that is based around the idea of not just where the Earth is, but where are places you can actually play on the Earth, so they can tell the difference between a public park and a railway line and make sure that they put the Pokemon in the park and not on the railway line.
It's interesting because Microsoft had some ambitions with this, with HoloLens, their mixed reality. They made a Minecraft Earth that was kind of a Pokemon Go. You could build Minecraft stuff in the real world, and they killed it.
Yeah, it didn't last very long.
Mm. Yeah.
They launched it, and it was neat. But did it ever even get an official public release?
I don't think
release?
It ever got out of beta. I played with it, and it was in beta, I think. It was like, it felt like, we're so close. But that's part of the problem with all of this, is the technology really isn't there yet. But now's the time to start thinking about it.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure. But part of it is, bits of it are, and we're trying to fit the pieces together and make it. But to actually overlay things on the real world in real time, you need a bunch of stuff to work very, very well.
Microsoft was really using it to show off their, what was it called, Azure something points, map points.
That's right. Yeah.
They had a cloud-based kind of geo-coordinate system.
So that multiple people could be in different places looking at the same thing, interacting.
Yeah. So all of this is in the news again because Mark Zuckerberg, it's clear that Facebook's had this kind of ambition since they bought Oculus, right?
Well, yeah, they've been talking about this for a while. There's Horizon.
So he was talking to Casey Newton, and he called the metaverse the successor to the mobile internet. That clarifies a little bit what he thinks of it. And this got a lot of attention. Pledged to turn Facebook from a social media company to a metaverse company.
When I see that line, I'm thinking about that Oculus that you gifted me and how I don't touch it anymore because of those news.
That's why I gave it to you.
He's like, wait a minute, I can't now use this unless I have a Facebook account.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That one you can use. That one I think you can use.
That's the first Quest one.
Yeah, he has the original.
I don't know. It seems like I remember seeing a banner pop up one time.
Did it say, what's your Facebook?
I think Facebook will attempt on that.
That's why I never got the Quest, too.
If it's not required, then maybe I'll keep playing it, because I enjoyed it.
So they have, according to Protocol, all in on the metaverse. They're reorganizing to build a metaverse product group. It'll be headed by Vishal Shah, who's currently VP of Product at Instagram. Facebook Gaming VP Vivek Sharma will be leading development of something the company calls their Horizons VR world. We've seen some of that. That's out in prototype. Mm-hmm. A gaming executive from Facebook, Jason Rubin, will be there as well, and they'll all be reporting to Facebook's VP of AR and VR, Andrew Bosworth. He announced on Monday, the founding of this group with these words to remember. To achieve our full version of the metaverse, we need to build, and I think this is kind of what you were talking about, Kevin, the connective tissue between these spaces so you can remove the limitations of physics and move between them with the same ease as moving from one room in your home to the next. To focus our efforts and deliver on this vision, we're bringing together the teams that have been driving some of this fundamental work. Maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but it is true that on the Rift and the HTC Vive, moving around is really hard because you can't actually walk from place to place.
No, and even
because you'll hit a wall.
Yeah, even on the Quest. I mean, the Quest has come a long way.
But how do they do it? You point and you say, "Take me there." You point with the controller and say,
well, I'm talking about like free motion walking. Like, yes, you can use your controller or you can walk around.
Well, they've talked about that using cameras.
It's wireless and you can draw your safe zone. I can't remember what they call it. But even with the pass-through camera, it's still pretty tenuous. Like, it's better than not having
a camera.
You see
a wireframe of the room, right?
You just never know where the corner that you forgot to draw out is going to like peg you in the forehead. It's going to take you to the floor. So there's always a little bit of that, you know? So they've got a ways to go.
Player One, of course, the guy had
the treadmill, right?
That kind of weird, 360 degree treadmill. You can move in any direction. Yeah. He was attached with elastics, and it looked very uncomfortable. To be honest with
you, but that's the future.
I actually tested that for Screensavers.
I remember,
and it was very uncomfortable. Yeah. Okay. Yes, it was really weird. It was not normal. It was not natural.
Why do you want to have a haptic so that people kick you in the leg and things?
Ow!
Oh, man.
Because what we want is pain. Suit. You had a full haptic suit. Yeah.
But I mean, the other problem you have with, the AR stuff makes some sense. So the thing that Niantic does says, okay, well, we'll put you out in the world and you're playing in the world. Or, Google does the AR navigation now, which can be quite useful.
I think I'm kind of more of a believer in that, the mixed reality or augmented reality kind of vision. That's not a metaverse.
But the challenge there,
that's my question.
Well, it can be metaverse, but then you've got to be in the right place,
Right.
If I'm standing on top of this hill in Yorkshire, then there's no one else around.
Right.
And I can,
Sounds awesome.
Niantic's actually been struggling with that in Pokemon Go. Because you can do a raid if you're proximate to a gym, but during COVID, they added the ability to do remote raiding. You're still playing. Yeah. Kevin, you're still playing. I can tell you're nodding.
No, it's just my son works for them, so I know
something. Oh, he does. Oh, that's cool. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Well, tell him he's doing a really good job and not to take back the COVID enhancements because it made the game much more fun.
Yeah, but that is the challenge. The challenge you have with AR is, especially even if you're just doing it for data overlays, if I want to look down on the city, I've got to go and climb a hill to look at it.
Right.
Or I've got to decide how to fly. And you hit the same problem. Any of these mapping things, you hit all these projection problems of what makes sense and what doesn't. And you also hit the classic XKCD thing of everything's population density. And so every piece of data you overlay ends up just being a map of where people live. So you hit a bunch of sort of weird.
It's kind of the gray goo problem of the metaverse, right? Everything's all kind of the same.
I'm still kind of foggy on what exactly it means to be a metaverse. Now, I never read Snow Crash, so that's probably part of the reason. And maybe I'm admitting something that I shouldn't be admitting out loud.
Don't worry, there's two of us in the room.
Don't hurt me. Okay, there we go. But like,
it's a fairly quick read. It's quite fun. But okay.
Oh, it's really good. It's thick. You may say it's a quick read, but it's a pretty thick book.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I won't.
Neil never wrote a short book. Actually, he did write a short book. But in the beginning, there was a command line is short. But most of his books are pretty thick.
Yeah, it's fairly thin. Yeah. But yeah, it's not as thick as what he's done more recently.
Yeah. Quicksilver Trilogy, the 18,000 page?
Oh, that sounds approachable.
It's not that long. But it feels that long.
Boy, is it on Audible?
Yes, it is. Even on Audible, that sounds approachable.
Even Audible had to divide it into six different books. It was so long.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
So,
that was part of you getting around him not finishing his books, wasn't it? If you wrote six and they glued together. But no, so the basic, Snow Crash has a bunch of deep stuff. It has some good mythos things in it as well. But the basic idea is the world is split into strange commercial franchises, but there's another shared world that everyone can go into, which is the metaverse, which involves headsets and wandering around. And it's interesting because it kind of predates the web. It was written before the web was mainstream. And so it's thinking about the web, but from a VR point of view. So it's kind of on in a sort of history technology thing. It's, the other one that's fun like that, which I've mentioned on this show before, is Douglas Adams' Hyperland, which was made in 1989-90 and was an exploration of how do we do hypertext just before the web existed. And it ends up wandering off into VR and doing weird stuff like that as well. But there's sort of, some of this is like old tech that keeps coming back. We've had imagined VR worlds for a very long time.
Sure.
There's an entire genre of movies from the 90s that are different kinds of imagined VR worlds because it appeals very much to
Tron.
Filmmakers.
Yep, Tron, loved it. Lawnmower Man.
It's cheap because you don't have to build a set.
Right, yeah, right.
Well, Tron was expensive because they didn't have
the tech.
Tron was back in the 80s, so that was pricey.
But so what you're explaining...
And by the way, you saw all the money on the screen, didn't you? I mean,
hey, at the time, it was hot.
A little shade there.
I think this is the problem is that fiction can imagine this, we can imagine this, and yeah. and it's yeah. appealing, this notion of a world that's not of the world.
True that escape.
You can go, and yeah. it's really escape, and yeah. you can fly, you can do anything you want. And it's so real that you can't, it's almost impossible to distinguish it from the real world. And that's not, you consider, it's not such a hard reach from a conceptual idea because you're really already in the metaverse. Mm-hmm. We only see the real world through these engines of our sensorium, the senses, mm-hmm. and the real world actually looks nothing, I think, I don't know, because I've not been there, nothing like the world we're seeing, but we interpret it with our brain. So in effect, we are already in the concept of a metaverse.
Isn't that what Elon Musk said?
Yeah, he thinks we're in a simulation. That's a little step beyond that, which I'm not convinced is wrong, but I just don't think there's any way to prove
it. How do you even prove it? It sounded really similar.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just right now, your perception of the world comes from touch, smell, sight. Uh-huh.
Right. And the limited levels of touch, yeah, sense, smell. Right. Like, we don't even experience the entire
not
wavelength.
Not even close. Of if you did, you'd get an overwhelm.
Yeah, true.
And your eyes are seeing everything upside down because of the way lenses work. So your brain is correcting.
And flips it around.
Yeah. The brain
blowing
is doing,
my mind right now.
Your brain, we are in a metaverse in effect. You know, we're in an imagined, constructed reality based on what is out there, but it's not necessarily exactly the same. Mm. So I understand why conceptually it's easy. I think technically it's much more difficult, and the problems to solve are almost intractable. You know, until you can actually have a wetware interface, you know, what are the cyberpunk version of the metaverse, Gibson's version of the metaverse, you plug in.
I was just going to say, it seems to me what we're craving, or I don't know if we're craving it, but what we expect is something that takes our current perception of what reality is and sensation and all that and replaces it with something that's like a one-to-one replacement. That doesn't come from putting a VR headset on and putting a controller in your hand, because that's very different from what we experience on a regular basis. It has to be something that plugs into you and short circuits or something, your actual sensory system.
Kevin, from your experience with these companies, I mean, this is obviously super blue sky. If this were, you know, IBM, this would be considered like you'd put these guys off in a building somewhere far away in Armonk. This is very, very blue sky for Facebook. But everybody's doing it. It's like Waymo in a way. It's turning out to be a harder problem. How important is it? Is it because these companies are trying to find the next big thing and they're really reaching, or it seems like everybody in tech's doing this?
That is part of it. I mean, part of it is that, you know, the obvious technology progression that we have had has gone. You know, things were getting smaller and we were carrying them around, and we've gone from, you know, desktops to laptops to phones, and we try to wrist things. They don't really do much. And part of that is, oh, what if we attach the displays to our faces? And we've been, you know, it's been a trope, you know, as I said, since the 80s. The question is, you know, can we actually do that? And is that?
I think we can, but not with attaching things to our faces.
Right. And that's where a lot of them look weird. You know, well, Google Glass is trying not to attach. You know, you attach to your glass, you have a little screen here, the project's called, the Google one is supposed to not involve screens over your face, but light filled things. That one they bought, which has gone a bit quiet. But, so there's ways to try and do it. But the challenge is always, but you've also got to either replace your entire visual field with something compelling, which is very hard to do for more than a few minutes at a time. If you spend more than half an hour in one of those things, you do end up feeling a bit
nauseous. You want to throw up. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. It's an intense gaming thing rather than a, I would spend my work day in this type thing.
Right.
And so the question, you know.
It's so funny because we're still seeing Microsoft videos of people spending their work days in these things.
It doesn't seem like much fun.
The
Microsoft demo was that weird thing where they were putting the people in the same shared space.
Yeah.
They had to fake their faces because their faces were all covered in goggles.
And they had no legs, I think.
Which is one of the plot points of Snow Crash. But the plot points of Snow Crash was there was only 22 who cared about people's faces, and that was actually the most important part of what they were doing. But they had to invent like laser scanning your eyeballs and things to make it work. Mm. And I'm not sure I really want a laser scanning my eyeballs controlled by something written by Facebook. Not that.
Yeah.
Mr. Kevin, I don't know if you have the answer to this, but what do shareholders or stakeholders in all of these tech companies? Are they saying, hey, why aren't we looking into VR more and AR more?
Is that what's pushing it?
You know, is the push coming from the people with the money, or is this truly just development and wishful thinking and wanting to try to make the dreams come
true? I think it is more from the tech side. I think it's more that people have had this dream for a long time that mm-hmm. you can replace the world with your computer. And so they're, you know, Palmer Luckey said, well, why don't I just build it? And he built it and built something that sort of half worked. And then Facebook bought him. And there's been, you know, a whole series of companies that have been doing this for a long time. And originally they would sell to the military and things like that. And there are good heads-up display things,
right,
but they're still very expensive.
Right.
And what they've been trying to do, you know, Google did the, what if we just stick your phone to your face thing with cardboard?
Which is dead now. Google has killed now.
One of the reasons these phones... My phone is getting cumbersome.
Oh, look at that. It's magic.
That's the perfect...
You're in the metaverse.
There we go.
Are you supposed to show that?
But part of... You know, as we're saying, part of the reason these phones had such... This phone's got a 4K screen, which makes no sense as a phone.
At all.
But it made sense as a thing in cardboard, because if it's that far from your screen, face, then a 4K screen makes sense. And
it's,
so, you know,
it's bad for battery life. It costs more.
Yeah.
And you can't tell the difference.
There's no real visible difference unless you're using a microscope to look at your phone.